the third most complained about programme in British television history, and I'm determined to topple those other two.
There's always some new bloke, some better bloke, just waiting around the corner.
They said, oh, there's some rumour that Showtime might be doing it as a series, and you know it's going to be so watered down, diluted, they won't deal with the sex, they won't deal with what it's really like to be gay.
How's it going? You had a busy night?
Because of Queer as Folk, there is a queer eye. For the straight guy, there's an L word. We have opened up the arena.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canada's marriage equality bill wins another round with the right. Australian Greens grow a state-level marriage rights strategy. And Queer as Folk leaves a giant imprint on the TV landscape. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 16th, 2005. Canada's Parliament this week rejected a major challenge to the government's bill to open legal marriage to same-gender couples. A motion by Conservative Party leader Stephen Harper to deny the marriage bill at second reading was defeated by a 55% majority. While the smaller Bloc Québécois and New Democratic parties overwhelmingly rejected the Tory motion, along with just four Conservative members of Parliament, about a quarter of Liberal Party MPs split from their own government to support it. The Canadian Bar Association had advised MPs that the motion was a constitutional lemon. Legal experts generally agree that gay and lesbian couples can only be denied marriage by invoking for the first time ever the so-called notwithstanding clause to override the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Harper claims otherwise.
A number of demonstrations were held this week, both for and against marriage equality. The largest saw somewhere between 8 and 15,000 march in Ottawa to protest marriage for same-gender couples, led by Harper and organized primarily by the religious right. There were also about 100 counter-demonstrators. Several interfaith rallies supporting marriage equality were also staged around Canada, the largest drawing some 300 people in Toronto.
The parliamentary vote confirms expectations that the government's marriage bill will ultimately be enacted, despite Tory plans to slow the process. But Harper has hinted he may seek to topple the minority Liberal government before this legislative session is over, a move that would kill all bills still under consideration. A current corruption scandal has made the long-ruling Liberals vulnerable, with recent polling giving Harper's Tories more than a third of the votes compared to a quarter for the Liberals should an early election be called.
Australian Greens are seeking to open marriage to same-gender couples with legislation at the state level, and introduced the first of those bills this week in Tasmania, home of Australia's first civil unions. Although the Australian government enacted a definition of marriage as exclusively between one man and one woman, that law made no explicit mention of the states, and ironically, it's that law itself that now makes it possible for states to enact same-gender marriages, according to University of Sydney professor George Williams. While state marriage laws have been constitutionally overridden by Australian laws to date, he reasons that the exclusive national definition has effectively removed the nation from any power over non-heterosexual marriages its states may wish to create. The Greens have seized on this concept and are reportedly drafting bills for New South Wales, Western Australia, South Australia, and the Australian Capital Territory.
Green Party Justice spokesperson Nick McKim brought the same-sex marriage bill to Tasmania's House of Assembly, saying his party's overriding aim is to initiate a mature and respectful public debate by means of an inquiry by a joint legislative committee. Tasmania's Attorney General Judy Jackson supported holding that inquiry if the bill indeed passed constitutional muster, and a second constitutional law expert affirmed Williams' view. But apparently Jackson did not speak for her Australian Labour Party government, even though a resolution supporting marriage equality passed at the last state conference of Tasmania's ALP. Their House leader, Deputy Premier David Llewellyn, had his caucus support a Liberal Party motion to reject same-gender marriage in principle, ensuring the motion's success. However, that motion did not explicitly rule out the possibility of a parliamentary inquiry.
The bill in Tasmania sparked some calls for action in New South Wales, including one from Sydney Mayor Clover Moore. But State Attorney General Bob Debus is rejecting the Greens' legal theory, maintaining that marriage is an exclusive power of the Commonwealth.
Australia's amended Marriage Act may not stop its states from marrying same-gender couples, but the U.S. state of Oregon's voter-passed state constitutional amendment definitely stops its counties from doing so. That's the judgment of the Oregon Supreme Court, which this week invalidated some 3,000 marriages of gay and lesbian couples licensed in Multnomah County a year ago. While leaning heavily on the new constitutional restriction of marriage to heterosexual couples that was adopted only after the Multnomah marriages, the state high court also affirmed that marriage is the exclusive province of the state, so Multnomah County officials should not have unilaterally violated the older statutory definition of marriage as heterosexual, despite their doubts as to its constitutionality.
Oregon's court was considering a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union and Basic Rights Oregon on behalf of a number of same-gender couples. Lead plaintiff Mary Lee spoke to reporters after the court ruled.
What is true is that our families may look different from some of your families. It's also true that our families want and need and deserve and have the right to the same kinds of protections, rights, privileges that your families have. And we'll stop at nothing to get that.
What the Oregon Supreme Court did not speak to was whether same-gender couples are entitled to the privileges and responsibilities of marriage as a matter of constitutional equality, saying that separate question had not been raised by the gay and lesbian plaintiffs at trial. But Oregon's Democratic Governor Theodore Kolongoski is committed to equal treatment for those couples, and he's working with state senators of both parties on a bill introduced this week to create civil unions for them.
Connecticut moved a step closer to creating civil unions this week with approval by more than 60% of the state house. But the house added a rider to the bill to explicitly define marriage as exclusively between a man and a woman, so the bill next returns to the Senate. A similar rider was previously rejected by the Connecticut Senate, which passed the civil unions bill last week by a 3-1 margin. Republican Governor Jody Rell has not been vocal about the bill, having said only at various times that she supports the concept of civil unions and opposes marriage for same-gender couples.
Meanwhile, only one member of the South Carolina Senate voted against a proposed amendment to that state's constitution to deny marriage to same-gender couples, although there were some abstentions. The dissenter was Charleston Democrat Robert Ford, who believes the current statutory ban on those marriages is adequate, and that the amendment amounts to bullying. The South Carolina House had already approved a similar proposed amendment, but will now have to consider a Senate language change. Hoping to avoid unintended interference with private contracts and corporate health benefits, the Senate version says, "Marriage between one man and one woman is the only lawful domestic union that shall be valid or recognized in this state."
Two U.S. politicians publicly identified themselves as gay men for the first time this week. One was first-term Minnesota State Senator Paul Koring, who was the only Republican to join the Democrats in blocking a move last week to force a Senate floor vote on a constitutional amendment against same-gender marriage. That action had sparked many to question his sexual orientation, although it was actually not the proposal but the procedure involved that he found objectionable. He's believed to be Minnesota's first openly gay Republican elected official, although the state's had gay and lesbian Democrats in office for 30 years.
And in Kansas, City Commissioner Mike Rundle chose the completion of his mayoral term to declare that he had probably been Lawrence's first gay mayor. He cited that state's enactment this month of a constitutional amendment against same-gender marriage, as well as rumors that have circulated throughout his 18 years in politics. He said that previously he'd feared his orientation might get in the way of his goals for good governance, but that was less of a concern now.
Open gay Nikki Vendola has been elected to the presidency of the Italian state of Puglia. After more than a decade in parliament, communist Vendola last week squeaked past incumbent president Raffaele Fitto of the conservative Forza Italia by less than 1% of the vote.
In Spain, the parliament of the state of Catalonia opened legal adoptions to same-gender couples at the end of March, becoming the fourth Spanish state to do so.
And following up on last week's sodomy convictions and sentencing in Fiji of an Australian tourist and his local sex partner, both men were released on bail this week after appealing to the Lautoka High Court. The Australian government filed a formal complaint to Fiji that Australian Thomas McCosker was denied the assistance of his consulate, which was not advised of his case until he was convicted. Local and international criticism of Fiji's sodomy laws by human rights groups continued to grow, but Fiji's Prime Minister, Licinia Karasse, remained unimpressed. He objected to foreign interference in Fiji affairs and declared that homosexuality is a sin. Britain has added a warning about Fiji's sex laws to its government tourism advisory.
And finally, April 13th marked the 9th annual Day of Silence in support of sexual minorities. It is believed that some 450,000 students at about 4,000 U.S. schools took the vow not to speak, using cards to explain they were protesting the silence faced by lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and their allies. Created and originally organized by students, the organizing was taken over more recently by GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, which this year used the occasion to launch a new Teach Respect media campaign against bullying and harassment. But this year, the right-wing Christian legal group Alliance Defense Fund attempted to respond on the following day with its own so-called Day of Truth, giving students T-shirts reading, "The Truth Cannot Be Silenced," and cards declaring their opposition to homosexuality as detrimental personal and social behavior. The fund reported that 1,150 students participated.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 16th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Although the fifth and final season has just started airing on the Showtime cable network, the Queer as Folk production offices in Toronto, Canada have shut down for good. The actors have packed their belongings and scattered, while props and costumes are already beginning to pop up on eBay. This Way Out's Steve Pride has a fond look at the groundbreaking TV show's revolutionary run.
To most Americans, it all began in December of 2000 with a 29-year-old man named Brian running his tongue down the backside of a 17-year-old boy named Justin on television. After the battle over a kiss on Ellen, this was a revolution, and it would change everything. But the story really starts further back, in early 1999, with an 8-part gay drama that took England by storm.
Hello, my name is Russell T. Davis. I am the creator of Queer as Folk. I did create the British version of Queer as Folk. In my mind, I created Queer as Folk full stop, because that's what the American version is. It's mine. Queer as Folk really came from everything I've been writing up until 1998, which always had a gay character in it. I can't begin to tell you, Steve, how many lesbian vicars, gay schoolboys, bisexual bridegrooms, HIV stories in kids' drama I've done. It's an awful lot, and you know, I'm very proud of those stories as well. So all of that was building up to taking all those subplots and putting them centre stage for one. So it was an entirely natural progression. In much the way that if I was a particularly religious person, I would eventually end up writing about God. I was a gay person, so I eventually ended up writing about gayness and putting it centre stage. And this coincided with a very lucky time in British television when Channel 4 was out to sort of revamp their drama and to be a bit more cutting edge and a bit more radical, because their drama had become very safe and boring, and they had a remit to make it more exciting. At exactly the same time as I started writing, so all those, it's like all these heavenly bodies came together in the constellation and were all in the right place at the right time, and I handed in the first episode of Queer as Folk and they said yes. Hooray!
There's always some new bloke, some better bloke, just waiting around the corner. That's why you keep going out. And that was the night he came along. The one night stand that never went away.
There was a record number of phone calls to Channel 4, a record number. It's the third most complained about programme in British television history, and I'm determined to topple those other two from the top of the tree. I can't remember what they are. Religious things, I think. But what surprised everyone was there was a massive number of votes of praise for it, which never happens. I mean, people always phone up to complain. People who like something very rarely phone up to actually say we like it. And there was an incredible number of phone calls, hundreds and hundreds of phone calls saying, thank God this is on, we like it, which was such a shock. I'd expected all the complaints. I didn't expect the letters of support. So it was very good. It was madness. Those weeks in 1999, you could not open up a newspaper for weeks on end without seeing the name of this programme in print. It just went berserk.
What came next was unexpected and remarkable.
All these stories started to filter through about black market tapes. There was a bar in Hawaii that was running out black market tapes and posting them all over the place, and friends posting them over. And it was, you'd start to read about it on the internet. That was so weird, and suddenly we were getting phone calls about it, and people saying, I've seen your show, and we'd be saying, how have you seen your show? And it's like, I sat down last night, I watched all eight on, and some of those bootleg copies were dreadful condition. You know, they were fifth generation copies, because it's a very handsomely produced show. The British original looks absolutely gorgeous, so I dread that a lot of Americans will have seen really fuzzy old videotapes of it, but it was a whole black market.
Legions of Queer as Folk fans around the world were horrified when American television announced a remake. But luckily, the dynamic duo Showtime put in charge had been responsible for breakthrough gay films like An Early Frost. They were not only gay, they were life partners, and they understood that this project was special.
I'm Ron Cowan.
And I'm Daniel Lipman.
We were working on another project at Showtime. The financing fell through. We'd been there, a year maybe, struggling away on this thing. It was quite a disappointment when it all fell apart and they couldn't put the money together. And right about that time, Dan and I had seen an article in the Los Angeles Times. The headline was, "The Best Television Show You'll Never See." And we read this, wondering what in the world that could be. And it was about this show in England called Queer as Folk, about a bunch of queers. And anyway, we were reading this and it sounded pretty remarkable. Then it turned out that Showtime had actually optioned this particular TV show and wanted to make an American version of it. And as so often happens in your career, being in the right place at the right time is such a factor and just a surprise. We were just there. We were lucky. We were very lucky. We also, of course, as a friend recently pointed out, had some experience and some credits to our name.
And also, this article Ron's talking about was the front page of a Sunday calendar. And the reason it said the best show you'll never see is because they said, oh, there's some rumor that Showtime might be doing it as a series. And you know, when Queer as Folk comes to the U.S., it's going to be so watered down, diluted. They won't deal with the sex. They won't deal with what it's really like to be gay. So it's probably better they don't do it. And when it was offered to us, Ron and I looked at each other and said, you know something? And we said to Showtime, there's only one way to do this. And that is, we have to either match the British or go beyond the British. We cannot do a show that is watered down, because if we do, there's no point in doing it. And they agreed.
How's it going? You had a busy night?
Just checking out the bars, you know? Boy Toy, Meat Hook.
Meat Hook?
Really? So you're into leather?
Sure.
Where you headed?
Something special.
I can change that.
I'm Bob Greenblatt, the president of entertainment at Showtime.
And why is Queer as Folk important?
It's the only show of its kind. There really isn't anything like this anywhere else, except maybe The L Word, which we're also doing. But, you know, aside from that, everything is more comedic and lighthearted and funny, which is okay. It makes people comfortable. But we have the luxury of going really beneath the surface.
Hi, my name's Hal Sparks, and I play Michael. In the original series in Britain, the Michael character was sort of a doormat, and that's the way he started out in the American series. And over time, he started to grow. He's the only character in television history that's in an HIV positive negative relationship. He's got a son that he's adopted with his partner, and they're trying to raise him, and he's got a baby on the way. So he's become an adult. Fatherhood has forced him into adulthood. In the early seasons, we had to get past what the audience didn't know about gay life, and we got that done. Then, once you get past all the details, you can get to the real story underneath, the emotional content. And I think after we got all the plumbing stuff out of the way in the first couple of seasons, the last two have really been about soul-level issues.
Hi, I'm Harris Allen. I play Hunter. Hunter's a very interesting character because he's gone from the street hustling into a warm, loving family. So that was a huge change. He kind of covers his like real self up with a hard image. He's like very crass in the way he talks and rude, and he uses that to like protect himself. But I think on the inside, he's really just a scared teenager who's been through a lot of hard times and scary times. So I think he's like learning how to love.
Why do you think the show is important?
Because it deals with so many issues that so many other shows don't have the guts to deal with, and it breaks a lot of boundaries that way.
This is Mitch Morris, Cody Bell from Showtime's Queer as Folk, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
This is Sharon Gless. Because of Queer as Folk, there is a queer eye. For the straight guy, there's an L word. We have opened up the arena, and we're the first to represent the gay community, and I'm very proud of it.
Do you hear from mothers of gay sons?
All the time, yeah. A backlash that I never expected. It's a wonderful feedback for me. I sometimes think it's not really deserved because I just say the wonderful words they write me. But I have more people come up to me and sometimes thank me for making it possible for them to accept their son who's gay. And a lot of times I have people come up and say, you remind me so much of my mother. I want to say, oh, I'm so sorry. But they're relating to the heart part of her.
My name is Taya Gill, and I play Lindsay Peterson on Queer as Folk. And Queer as Folk is important because it depicts characters who are friends. And I think that the power of friendship is very undervalued these days. And I think that Queer as Folk has a strong message to say about the power of friendship and the power of acceptance.
This is Scott Lowell. I play the adorable Ted Schmidt on Queer as Folk.
Less adorable lately.
a little less adorable lately. He sunk about as low as he could go last year, you know, so he's got a way to go to improve himself and win back the good graces of a lot of people in his life. And the fans, I think, they're a little mad at him. I've been smacked on the street and yelled at, and so I'm hoping people treat me kinder this summer.
Both you and the other straight guys in the cast have a refreshing attitude toward the press. I mean, usually when I interview a straight guy on a gay show, every other word is, my girlfriend said this tide. My girlfriend did my...
Yeah, I noticed that before I took the show, and it kind of distressed me, and I think it does a disservice. I think it's kind of insulting, too, which is why I, at least for the first year, didn't want to talk about my sexuality at all, till Peter Page finally told me, honey, it's okay. Everybody knows.
I'm Peter Page. I play Emmett Honeycutt, the self-confirmed queen of our group of boys.
Has being out helped, hindered, impacted your career at all?
I don't know how it's impacted my career. There's no other model for me to compare it to. I'm sure I get dismissed for roles that I could do because people know that I'm gay. I'm sure I get considered for roles that people would never consider me before because they respect and believe in the choices that I've made.
My name is Robert Gant, and I play Ben Bruckner, a professor of gay studies on Queer as Folk.
I've pretty much been a gay boy as long as I can remember, so I have much to call upon as an actor.
Coming out has been such a boon to my career. You know, I have to say that things have never been better. I feel more opportunity than I've ever felt as an actor. Perhaps one of the most significant things is that I have energy to draw upon now. You know, so much went into hiding for so long, and all of that energy has been freed up now to now go in the service of my acting and the rest of my life, for that matter. So I'm not only a better actor, but I'm a much happier human being.
Queer as Folk producers Ron Cohen and Daniel Lipman.
I think Dan and I both do believe when you take everything else away, remove all the other elements, we're really showing boys becoming men. That, I think, is what the show is really about to us. We started the show with these guys who are in their late 20s, and they're doing what guys in their late 20s do. They're screwing around, they're doing drugs, they're partying, they're being promiscuous, and I think straight guys do exactly the same thing as gay guys do. Except, of course, when straight guys, you know, sleep with a lot of girls, they're called studs. And when gay guys sleep with a lot of guys, they're called sluts. And when women sleep with a lot of guys, they're called sluts too. But that's a whole other curious question. But I do think it's about growing up. I think it's about a process that is often very difficult for gay men to grow up. Oftentimes, we do not have the same role models to help us through our maturation as straight men. We don't have a culture that supports us. Oftentimes, we don't have those close relationships in our lives that help us become men. And I think the way a gay man becomes a man is very different than the way a straight man becomes a man. I think oftentimes it takes much longer. There's often a different route that you take just by the nature of who you are. That you also grow up with a lot of secrecy, a lot of fear around your sexuality. You're afraid a lot and you're threatened a lot. And I think you're alone a lot. And I think because of that, social maturation is a very different thing. And so I also think it's a very painful process for a lot of gay boys to become men, finding your way. And we sort of declared that as one of our themes in the show. And it also gave us someplace to go in terms of time, because we are telling a story through time. It is a series. It's not a two-hour movie. It's not a two-hour play. It goes on week after week, year after year. And so the concept of boys to men gave us something to write toward, that in year three, year four, these people have grown and matured from when we first discovered them as these naughty boys in the pilot. Hopefully 4 years later, they will have discovered a lot about themselves. They will have grown. They will have become richer, more developed human beings. That does not necessarily mean they'll become more conventional in their choices.
But also it means that some will learn the lessons and some won't. It doesn't mean that they will all become men. Some will remain boys, as a lot of gay men do, and others will become more mature. And it is a very different world, I think, than the straight world in that regard.
I want you to move back in.
Huh?
I said I'd like it if you and I were to live together.
Are you proposing?
Of course not. With the sudden and unexpected plethora of gay marriages, I'd hate to add to the glut. All this running back and forth between here and Daphne is just time-consuming. As for the times when you're not around, I wouldn't particularly mind it if you were.
I've been waiting for you to ask me that since the first night you brought me here.
There's really nothing I can add. I can't wait to see every last minute of Queer as Folk this season. Yet I dread the last minute. Luckily, after the 84th and final episode airs, we'll have more than just memories. Pocket Books has released two novels based on the series, Never Tear Us Apart and Every 9 Seconds, and Showtime has released the first 4 seasons on DVD. As always, find links and more info at prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. You think you're a man, but you're only a boy. You think you're a man, you are only a toy.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Full Frontal performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime, online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. And remember, you can ask for our emailed monthly This Way Out updates and or our weekly program promo messages when you email tworadio@aol.com. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please find out how you can help keep us on the air and get our tangible thanks by visiting our website. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KPFK Los Angeles and Santa Barbara, California, 2BOB Taree, New South Wales, WOJB Hayward, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.